accession number 19058, reel 5.
Philip Gord, reel 5. Now, can you tell me something about the officers you served with in the Coldstream Guards?
Yes. It seemed to be an illusion sometimes, but very few were plain misters. We had earls, sirs, viscount, dukes, all sorts of counts, all sorts of wonderful fellows. In the main, they were charmers. They had a kind of special breeding. Now, there was a certain rapport. It's difficult to explain. The combination of being in awe, a combination of mystique and rapport that I don't think happens anywhere else except in the Guards. It's a hell of a job to try to explain it. Most of them have had a tough education. They're brought up to be tough in an elegant kind of way. And that's why, as Guards officers, they are really, in the main, par excellence. I don't know how to put it in words, the excellence of the officers, of the Guards officers. It's something to do with their upbringing, I suppose. Eton, the Guards, or Harrow, Oxford, I don't know. But the net result is something quite magnificent. I've often tried to be like them if I could, with stiff upper lip, but I'm afraid I'd lose my cool much quicker than they would. They could keep their cool. They were fantastic in an emergency, in a crisis. We always had the greatest confidence following them. Is there any more I can say about officers? They're just something aside, something special.
Would you have very much to do with them, or would it be mostly with the NCOs?
In the intelligence section, the officers were surrounding us, and we were working directly under the officers more than under the senior warrant officers. That included the commanding officer. We were answerable to him for maps, for giving reports of patrols, working under instructions on what to do, and so on. And they were very understanding, very patient. If we made a bit of a mistake, providing it was a genuine mistake and not being slovenly, they would understand. They were good.
How much did the officers depend on the NCOs?
Oh, quite a lot. Yes, quite a lot.
Did you get any barrack room bullying?
Very, very little. I'm trying to think of an incident and I can't really recall any bad cases of bullying. It's said that bullies are usually cowards. Well, I think in the Guards we had very few cowards. We had toughies who stood no nonsense and called a spade a spade, or called a spade a bloody shovel. They would stand no truck. But as far as bullying would go, especially physical bullying, what is meant by bullying? Being shouted at, you don't call that bullying at all. On the parade ground, if you're shouted at, that is part and parcel of life in me. And of course it's always with humour. And sometimes you could answer the warrant officers and NCOs in the same sort of humour, and they would just laugh with you. For example, there was one who pointed a stick at the belly button of this fellow in front of him. He said, "On the end of this stick is an idiot." "Yes, sir, but not this end." And that really took the wind out of the... And he saw the humour of it. You could do that sort of thing.
But I would say that bullying is a malicious misuse of one's power over a weaker person.
No, I don't. Didn't see it really misused. Not really. They might pull rank a bit. That wasn't really a misuse of power as far as bullying would go.
You haven't said anything about your period in England as far as ceremonial duties were concerned. Did you ever have...
I never did a guard at Buckingham Palace. We were being groomed for the war. I wish I had had a... Even though I was at Wellington, I wish I had had a chance of being able to say, oh yes, I've been on guard at Buckingham Palace, but that didn't come my way.
Did you in Italy come across Popsky's private army?
Yes, I did. Sorry, I think he was a phony. We were at a place called Trimensoli, which was by the Garigliano, which I spoke about earlier. Now, we knew a route for our patrols, our intelligence patrols, by going down to the coast. There was an Italian peasant who had a house there, who showed us where the mines had been laid by the Germans, so we could go through his garden path and through his little orchard and dodge the German mines and go right up to the German supply dump. And it became easy. There seemed to be a gap in the defences by the sea. They didn't expect patrols that way because of the mines and other things. And in any case, a lot of the German, those in German uniform, were Polish, and they weren't really our enemies at all. They just didn't. They were lax. They didn't care. There was on the other side, if coming inland a bit, we had a. Oh gosh, he was nearly. Well, they said he was 7 foot tall, but he seemed that way. And Oberschutz Schmidt, who used to do patrols and scare the living daylights of our fellows in the front positions. He was a great he got killed on one of his patrols, and we had such an admiration for him because he was such a good soldier. We felt sorry for him when he was killed in a weird sort of way. Now, one day we had this Colonel Pinyakov with some of his men come. He's known as Popsky, of Popsky's private army. I'm sorry, I really did think he was a phony. He showed his dislike of the guards. I don't think he liked discipline. He liked to be what we called bolo, free and easy. Discipline he thought was something stupid. But we thought discipline was essential. And he and his men seemed to have absolutely no discipline whatever. And he came and he brushed off any advice we tried to give him. He said he was going to blow up a bridge. Well, we knew where the bridge was. We knew that the best way of approaching that bridge would be to go the route that I knew, that we knew, down through the garden path with the Italian, through his orchard, up to the up to the coastway, past the supply dump and get to the bridge that way. He could have done that, I think, easily. But he brushed aside any advice of people who had been there all the times. Oh, no, I'll do it my way. We'll go the direct route. Well, that was the maddest thing of all. He was going right through the area of Oberschutz Schmidt. He was bound to have trouble because Schmidt was there on the alert all the time. But he wouldn't be towed. And in consequence, he went this spectacular route, the short route, and he lost one or two killed. That could have been avoided. I think the man was a fool. And what he wrote about the guards, well, I don't know. Here it is. Where is it?
This is from his book.
This is from his book. The guards battalion on the left were a much grander affair. They had put their headquarters in the houses of a village on a hilltop, in full view of the enemy under a crossfire of artillery, mortars and machine guns. Whereas our friend, the country solicitor, seemed to run his battalion single-handed, The guards had a full staff, the CO in one house, the adjutant in another, the officers' mess across the street, the quartermaster down the road, the intelligence officers, the signallers, all accommodated in billets. The rickety houses were crumbling down, and the blast of each shell burst sent stones crashing through the ceilings. You couldn't move in the streets without being picked out by a sniper, and the enemy seemed so near that everyone spoke in whispers. We found the colonel in the office storming in a hushed voice at a dead telephone. The lines had been cut by shell fire. The linesmen had suffered heavily and couldn't keep up repairs. 300 yards to the rear, we had come up a gully completely concealed from the enemy, where battalion headquarters could have worked in comfort. Well, they damn well couldn't, I know that. But for an obscure reason, they preferred to be in billets. Grandly, we declined the offer of tin hats, for this seemed to be an occasion when the rules of etiquette had to be broken. And I was not displeased to give mild annoyance to our host, at the risk of a broken head from a falling stone. With many stops under archways, the colonel and the intelligence officer took us to a house at the top of the village from which, under showering bricks, we got a full view of the whole approach to our bridge. A narrow valley dotted with trees ran out of the guard's position down to the road and bridge, which could thus be reached all the way under cover. Now, that is not true. He was told not to go that way. The colonel pointed out the position of C Company through which we would have to go. The location of the enemy post he didn't know, but he thought they were thin enough. I asked him about minefields, of which he assured me they had none. C Company commander, whom we visited later, confirmed this information. We were having a drink in the battalion mess when a large piece of wall collapsed on the table. But we saved our glasses and departed. Where was it? Neither Canary nor myself liked the operation. His object was futile, and if we didn't expect much trouble at the German end, we were not so sure of the reception our party might get on return from a dull-witted guardsman. Now, that's very unfair. He writes in the most biased way about guardsmen. Now, he went...
What page is this from his book?
This is page 421 and 422. And he talks about Nebelwerfers that we had coming up from here. But had he gone to the route we had showed him, well, there's Monticherry, he could have got there without being seen. As it was, he lost one or two chaps killed. He was so stupid he wouldn't take advice.
So you wanted him to go up...
Along the coast. Road.
Along the coast.
Along the coast here.
Across the Garigliano.
That's right.
Towards...
Yes, well, we were already above the Garigliano, so there's Trimonsoli. He would go there. There was a smoke screen, permanent smoke screen. He could have gone there. That officially was the enemy line, but they were very thin Polish, and there was nothing else right up to the supply, and there was the bridge. He could have done that way. Instead of that, he went on the...
To the right.
Yes, and went right through the position of where the standing patrol always was, where Oberschutz Schmidt was stationed. I'm sorry, he was an absolute fool in some ways.
What is this word bolo you keep using?
Bolo is, couldn't care less. Doing anything contrary to the normal. If they're awkward, or if they do something daft, or if they're away from the norm, they're bolo. Another expression, of course, is ala kifik. That's an Arabian thing. Ala kifik, what God wills. Just take things as they come. If you say I'm ala kifik, well, it doesn't matter. Whatever God wants.
Dolce far niente.
Oh, that means sweet to do nothing.
So, ala kifik means happy-go-lucky?
In a way, yes. Yes. I'm ala kifik. No, I don't care. I'm ala kifik. Yeah. What God wills.